When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Talking Transfers from the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm Scott Saunders, joined by 90 Min's transfer correspondent, Graham Bailey, 90 Min's top cat, Toby Cudworth, and 90 Min editor, Tom Gott, Chelsea fan. What a week! We'll be talking all about Chelsea.
It's been something.
It really has. And it was Tom's birthday as well. What a nice early birthday present for you as Chelsea plunge into yet more chaos, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, it was the best present I could have asked for, really, getting the end of this era. I was ready for it a good few months ago, but we're finally there now.
Finally, our man Todd has changed his mind. We'll be talking about that today. Graham Potter sacked by Chelsea. Graham Potter turning down Leicester City. We'll talk a bunch of other things as well. Josko Gvardiol on the radar of some of Europe's biggest clubs. We'll talk Aymeric Laporte. We'll talk a Brazilian young prospect who could be moving to Europe. We'll talk William Saliba, Luke Shaw contracts, Kai Havertz and Kolo Muani from Frankfurt, who's been linked with some big clubs but might end up staying. We'll talk about all of that today on Talking Transfers, your usual weekly dose of transfer conversation. Subscribe to our show on all your major platforms. Follow us on Twitter as well, _Scott Saunders, Toby_Cudworth, @GrahamBailey and @TomGott2. For all of the latest, go to 90min.com /talking-transfers. I could have got there myself, Toby. And 90min_football on all your other social platforms such as Instagram, etc., etc. But yeah, let's start with Chelsea. Graham, I'll come to you first. Why now? Because it's been bad at Chelsea for a few months. They spent 600 million. They're 11th in the league. The master plan isn't looking so masterful currently.
Well, you know, I think it, with Todd, we've said on previous shows and we've reported on 90 Min. It was only Todd Burley really keeping Graham Potter in position. It's been that way for a few months. It was getting to the point where he'd see it through to the summer. But I just think, you know, the rest of the hierarchy at Chelsea had moved on from Potter a few months ago, from what we've been told. Same time as Tom, I think. All the normal people at Chelsea. and this is even the people like Paul Winstanley, who came from Brighton with him. I think they soon realised that the job was just too big for him. It wasn't, you know, he just wasn't the right man for Chelsea. And obviously that performance at the weekend against Villa, final nail in the coffin, as we reported, Todd Burley met with Graham Potter on Sunday and following that meeting, decided to move on. And from what I'm hearing, I think Graham Potter knew it was coming as well. So, I don't have a major issue with this guy. I think, you know, Todd Burley, you know, he made a major error appointing Graham Potter, but he's accepted that and moved on from it. I think he's done completely the right thing. He's accepted that he got it wrong. There's no point. It was better than him doing what, say, going further in the Champions League and possibly sticking with him up until September time and limping along. He's changed it now. The new manager is the summer. I just think it's a completely right thing they've done.
Toby, you're smirking. Tom, I spoke to you already. Toby.
I'm just grinning that we're trying to look at this in a positive way for old Todd. He sacked Thomas Tuchel, who won the Champions League. He paid £25 million or whatever to go and get Graham Potter from Brighton. Graham Potter, whose best ever finish was ninth with Brighton, a team who famously didn't score goals. And now they've got to pay God knows what to get rid of him. They've got Bruno Sauter in interim charge, ready to take on Real Madrid in the Champions League quarterfinals. I mean, give me strength. And they blew all of that money in January, including Mudryk, who, honestly, I don't know what you think, Tom. He looks absolutely terrible. He's miles off it. Miles off it.
It's nicer than what I'd say about him.
This is a professional show, guys. Let's keep it professional. So, Tom, how much of this is Graham Potter's fault? Because obviously, yeah, he should be doing better with the amount of players that he had. There's suggestions today, everything's come out afterwards. Chelsea players sitting on the floor at the training ground in team meetings because there's not enough seats because they've got so many players. All of this kind of thing. Surely, if Todd Bowley's this genius, I'm just going to throw this out there. If Todd Bowley's this genius and has got all the geniuses from around world football to bring this magical Chelsea project together, surely he probably should have known that Graham Potter wasn't up to the task before he gave him the job.
You'd assume so, wouldn't you? But, I mean, you can see the appeal of Potter. If you go back 12 months and he's this young, up-and-coming manager who's... He plays some nice football with Brighton. It's one of those, what if he comes to a bigger club, he gets big money and suddenly turns into the best manager in the world. It did seem somewhat plausible 12 months ago. The issue is now it isn't at all. How much of it's his fault? It's tricky. Obviously, I'm not one of those people that blames the manager for everything all the time. I think at the end of the day, these players are professional athletes who... they shouldn't just be forgetting how to play football because they're not being told what to do. Like, they've been doing this their whole careers. They should be better. But it's just not... something's not clicked. And at the end of the day, it's Potter's job to make it click. And if he hasn't, then he's got to go.
Do you look at that team sheet, Tom? Sorry to interject, Scott. I spoke to you on Saturday when I saw Reece James playing at right centre-back and Ruben Loftus-Cheek at right wing-back. And all of those attacks that Chelsea were formulating would spread the play wide. Loftus-Cheek's natural instinct would be to cut back and play the ball deep to Reece James or inside to Enzo Fernandez. And it was just pedestrian stuff. And surely that's on the manager and his setup. Reece James and Mark Cucurella in a central back three when you had Badiashile, who came in January, sitting on the bench. That for me just kind of says that, I don't know, did Potter know he was on his last legs? He was in full experimentation mode, even until his final game in charge. And that just says to me that he was never really had his head in the game.
Absolutely, yeah. That's one of those that I feel like you have to look at Potter for. It's to have three centre-backs where one of them is a centre-back, just it doesn't work. And especially Chelsea know that, like, it's no secret that wing-backs is... a Chelsea strength. Reece James is one of the best in the world in his position if you get him going. Ben Chilwell, very good on the other side. He's been one of Chelsea's best attacking players for weeks now. So to sabotage yourself seemed really strange. But again, it's what Potter did at Brighton. He made these crazy moves and everyone went, oh, it's genius. That's so fun. He could be brilliant. And he's not done anything different, but now just on a bigger stage, it's got that attention that it hasn't worked.
Yeah, who could have seen that coming? Anyway, Graham, let's talk about it then. So you mentioned Todd Bowley met with Graham Potter the day after the Villa defeat. Is there any indication about what's changed? Was this just one defeat too many? Because we've seen Chelsea play terribly for months. They are mid-table and have been mid-table all season. So, this was the first game back from an international break. They could have had 2 weeks to sort this out.
Mm. Well, I think I played a part in it as well, Scott. The fact that they looked so ill-prepared for the game. It didn't look like somebody had been working on that system for 2 weeks, did it? And I think that was part of it. You know, Burley obviously talking to his fellow members of the hierarchy at the club. But I say it was on him. You know, he appointed him. He listened to advice, obviously, from other people. And yeah, it was just a final straw. It really was. I don't think he was going to be in charge next season anyway. I think that was a given, unless he won the Champions League, somehow limped himself to winning that trophy. And no, I think they were preparing for his departure anyway. I think they've just brought it forward a few weeks.
Tom, am I right in saying Graham Potter's Champions League record was quite good?
Yeah, some of the best performances were in the Champions League, and that's what made it so frustrating, because like he bought himself some time by beating Dortmund, who like they were some of his best games were the Dortmund ones, and that's high level competition. So surely he can do it against the best, and then you come and you're dropping points against these struggling teams at Villa at the weekend. Like obviously, if you look at the stat sheet, Chelsea were on top, but if you watch the game, you'd see that they were. Never came anywhere close to winning that one. And to be able to mastermind a win over Dortmund and then not do the same against Aston Villa and teams of that sort of level, it became too much for fans. And the positivity disappeared a long time ago.
Ah, well, so another thing I'll come back to you, Graham, here. Has Julian Nagelsmann's availability potentially change Chelsea's mind here? I'm floating suggestions, ideas. There's obviously a lot of people in the frame to succeed Graham Potter. Chelsea have insisted that they will take their time. Read off some names, all the ones you'd link with Tottenham usually. Luis Enrique, Mauricio Pochettino, Nagelsmann obviously has now become available. Is there what are Chelsea thinking now moving forward?
I will take myself off mute, which always helps. I was just mentioning, yeah, a piece that me and Tom did on yesterday, I think it was, so many. A source described to us as the process is going to be exhaustive, thorough and professional. I know it made Toby laugh at the time. And they are really, yeah, they're going to make sure, they're not just making a swift appointment, even if it ends up being Nagelsmann or Riquet, which I suspect it will be one of those two. I think those two are the favourites at the minute. They are going to be looking at their options. And they're insisting that it's Paul Winstanley, Lauren Stewart, who are going to be overlooking it. Obviously, Burley and Bedad Iqbali, the fellow corner, will have the final choice. We know that. But they're trusting it to the sporting directors have got in there to cover the whole of Europe. Have a look there. Ruben Amorim, the excellent sporting coach, has been linked. They'll be looking at him. Oliver Glasner has been linked from Frankfurt as well. So I think you're going to probably see at least 6 to 7 to 8 names linked over the next 2 weeks. But as I said, I'd be surprised if it wasn't one of the main three, should we say, the three who were all available, Nagelsmann, Enrique, Pochettino. I'd be very surprised if it wasn't one of them.
For some reason, this job screams Luis Enrique to me. I'm not really sure why, but
I think for me, Scott, I think they'll go. I think they'll find it very hard to resist going the Hollywood direction. So I think Nagelsmann for the name. I think
Luis Enrique is a bigger name than Nagelsmann.
Is he fashion? Who's the most fashionable though?
Luis Enrique is fashionable.
Yeah, I see Enrique at Tottenham being that one who can build up the players and stuff. I think he's more like there. But I think Enrique's name, he's sat there and done very little, but his stock has risen so much in the last few weeks, hasn't it? And wow, if he's going to come back into football, he's got his choice of clubs. Same with Nagelsmann. But yeah, it'd be fascinating what happens next few weeks. But yeah, I think Enrique would be a wonderful fit for either, to be fair.
I'll tell you why it'd be such a good fit. Luis Enrique has an aversion to playing strikers. And Chelsea don't have strikers. So, Tom, it fits like a glove, doesn't it?
Perfect, yeah. Finally get someone who can do with all of these random attacking midfielders. Just throw them all in there and make something work.
So, Tom, Chelsea perspective, your perspective, what's the answer here?
I think it's a tricky one, really. I wrote yesterday, Chelsea just need to pick the best manager. This idea of a project manager, I don't think is one that exists. Every manager is a project manager, realistically, because unless you're finding someone who comes in and says, I need to win the title right now, every year, every single year, no excuses. Like, it's a naive approach to take, because that doesn't happen, especially in the Premier League. So I think, for me, I think I'm team Luis Enrique. I think he's shown it with Spain. On top of his, he's just good football. He manages characters and he plays young players. And I know that's a big thing as to why. I mean, Chelsea fans have been wanting that for years. Graham Potter was supposedly good at doing that. and then he hasn't done it at all because he's bought all these other players. But I think I want Luis Enrique. But to be honest, at this point, I just want someone competent who can actually lead a team.
Toby, you've been smirking through this entire conversation.
It's just the entire whole subject is funny, isn't it? I did a bit of research as to who Chelsea's longest serving manager is in the last 30 years. This is even pre Abramovich investment. It's Claudio Ranieri at 3 years and 2 months or something. Chelsea, they just employ managers for short-term success. So I guess this is how we still need to look at it.
No, Toby, they are different. They're so different.
But they're just not, are they? Right. As Tom alludes to, there's no such thing as project management now. And Chelsea have always been ingrained in, we either win or we dismiss you. And which of the managers that are available right now are probably going to inch Chelsea closer towards success? I don't know. Is it Luis Enrique? I mean, sure, Nagelsmann won the Bundesliga, but you could argue that most managers would win the Bundesliga with that Bayern team. So I don't really know who I would position as favourite. I just can't see why Pochettino would want to go there, for example, given that Ranieri is the longest serving manager. He's not going to go in for 2-3 years, is he? Poch actually is a manager who wants to be somewhere for a significant amount of time. I would liken Nagelsmann to wanting to be involved in that kind of model. And that's why I'm not necessarily sure if he actually fits either. Could be that Luis Enrique actually ticks the majority of the boxes in a weird roundabout way.
Graham, so Chelsea's plan moving forward, maybe there is no answer for this at the moment. However, they are obviously going to want to get this next choice of a manager right. How long do you think we're looking at Bruno being an interim charge? Will it be one of these candidates currently linked with the job? Could we see it dragged out until the end of the season and a manager currently at a club, a Carlo Ancelotti, a Jose Mourinho, enters the frame later?
Possibly. As I said, they're not putting a time frame on it just yet. Do we see, it wouldn't surprise me if we see someone agree to do it and then come in at the end of the season. If it's an Enrique Nagelsmann, a lot of these guys do want a bit of time off and wait till the summer. So it wouldn't surprise me if they announced something and they had someone in temporary charge, either Bruno or maybe bumped Tom John Terry up the
Avram Grant scale.
Yeah, that sort of thing. It wouldn't surprise me if they secure the appointment, but then wait until the summer. I think maybe the Real Madrid tie will tell us a lot. If they go out of the Champions League as we expect them to, that gives them a bit of leeway, doesn't it? Because, hey, we know they're finishing mid-table in the Premier League. They can appoint someone and come in the summer. So, yeah, I'd be amazed if it wasn't one of the main three we've been talking about. But, hey, Zinedine Zidane might come into the equation. Others might apply for the position. It's one of the most wanted jobs in Europe still. Because look at that squad. If you're an ambitious manager, getting hold of that squad, it must be mouthwatering. So, yeah, but I think we'll know within a month who it is. Maybe not the appointment has been confirmed, but I think we'll know within a month who it is.
Interesting times. So we could play a game of pick which manager goes where. I mean, I would imagine Real Madrid and PSG are going to come into this within the next few months as well. So it could be like a deck. It could be like a pack of cards, essentially. Or, you know, you never know which way it's going to run. Any final word on Chelsea, Tom?
I actually think the job's more appealing than a lot of the rivals are giving us credit for. Obviously, you've got a full squad full of objectively good players. You've got an owner who is pledging to spend big money to get you the good players. If he needs like a new striker, he wants Osimhen and he's happy to throw money at that. You've got players of these big, big caliber players that any manager would want to work with. You've obviously got the talent there already. And I think, I know it sounds silly saying it, I think he does have patience because he's obviously let Potter get this far. I don't think it's not unreasonable for him to say, oh, you've taken our team to 11th. You're going to have to be sacked now. I think any manager, if they took their team from Champions League to 11th, would get sacked. So if it shows that you can have a few obstacles and still actually keep your job, which I know is what you need from an owner. So I think there will be people lining up to work for Chelsea.
I want to keep going on about Chelsea, but we should move on. Let's talk Graham Potter. Graham. Oh, same name. Graham Potter. What is he going to do next? Because Leicester City, on the same day, decided to part with Brendan Rodgers, 19th in the table. I still don't think they'll go down, but I think Leicester have kind of realised themselves now that, oh God, this is a bad situation. We need to make a change. Graham Potter was approached. How are we framing this?
Yeah, Leicester have always liked him. They liked him previously, and they did make contact with him and his people. But Graham Potter, as we reported yesterday, made it clear he wasn't quite ready to take up a job within not 24, 48 hours of leaving Chelsea. I still think he has an interest there. You know, I think if it was an interim manager at Leicester, which I think they're considering, someone short term, I think Potter then again in the summer, I wouldn't completely rule him out going to Leicester, but in the summer. I think he suits Leicester. I think that squad they've got, the way they play, I think he'd be a good fit there. But he's not ready to do it now. And that leaves Leicester in this situation. Obviously, they sacked Brendan Rodgers, part of company, I should say, before they even knew that Potter was going. So it wasn't related to that anyway. But yeah, I think we'll have to see a firefighter going there at Leicester. That squad, you know, that's one of the best squads that could ever be relegated. I'd probably say since my own Middlesbrough with Janino, etc., got relegated, I think it's probably that level. I think that when you look at that Leicester team, some of my favourite players, Dewsbury Hall, Barnes, Maddison, how are they even in that position? It's just staggering. They don't know who they want yet, but I think they may go short term, Scott, from what we're hearing.
Toby?
I think it says a lot for how the manager movement system is working now. We always say that big players don't move in January. Typically, they wait until the summer before deciding their future. More and more and more, we're seeing interim managers until the end of the season rather than managers jumping ship and trying to save somebody. Because if you do go into Leicester now, what have they got left? 10 games? It's so tight at the bottom. This is part of the reason why West Ham, by the way, have kept hold of David Moyes, because who is there to appoint to go in and fix this kind of thing? Rafa Benitez is the name that has been linked with every single job with the teams that are around the bottom, because he's kind of the current firefighter. But outside of that, Southampton...
Toby, don't you find that a bit strange, though? Because he actually... Was it the one relegation battle he's been in, Rafa, he went down?
Yeah. Yeah. But... Southampton have stuck with Celes until the end of the season, interim manager. Spurs are running Stellini until the end of the season. It's the thing to do now, particularly when you get rid of a manager this late. So I can actually see Bruno staying at Chelsea until the end of the season, because you're going to lose to Real Madrid over two legs anyway, surely. And then what's the point? They're in mid-table. They're not going to get top seven. Too many points are going to be picked up by teams around them, so he'll stay in that position. Don't blame Potter for not wanting to instantly go to Leicester. Imagine if they go down. Imagine if they go down. Imagine if Everton went down.
Can you imagine that would be the worst season in the life of a manager, if Graham Potter leaves Brighton, goes to Chelsea, gets sacked by Chelsea in 11th, goes to Leicester and gets relegated?
That's probably thinking though, Scott, isn't it? Because his stock, even though he's left Chelsea, his stock is still quite high. He'd get outside the top four or top four to top six, he'd probably still get a job in the Premier League. If he went to Leicester and took that team down, because they look good from the outside, but there's obviously issues there, isn't there? I think that's probably a big reason why he's not doing it. But this caretaker thing, obviously United led the way, didn't they, with King Ralph, Scott? And that worked out brilliantly in the end.
Well, and if you watch Sunday's performance at Newcastle. Anyway, let's play this game then, because while you guys have been talking, I've played the game myself and I've written it down. So I'll go first and allow you guys to think. And if you're listening to this and you want to get in touch, feel free to play this game. I've got Spurs, Chelsea, Leicester, West Ham, Real Madrid and PSG. Who will be their managers at the start of next season? I see Graham's writing. Are you writing down, Graham?
I can't remember all those teams.
Spurs, yeah. Chelsea, Leicester, West Ham, Real Madrid, and PSG. Okay. Let's play the game. I'll go first. You guys have to think.
At the start of next season, who the manager will be?
Start of next season.
Okay.
So I'm going Tottenham, Brendan Rodgers. Chelsea, Luis Enrique. Leicester, Graham Potter. West Ham, Michael Carrick. Real Madrid, Pochettino. PSG, Julian Nagelsmann. Graham, you look prepared.
I was writing that. Real Madrid, I think Ancelotti will stay. I think Nagelsmann will be at Chelsea. I think Enrique for Spurs. If it's not Ancelotti, I think Poch might go to Real Madrid, by the way. That's my other one. PSG, Zidane.
Ooh, forgot about that one.
West Ham. I think if Middlesbrough don't go up, I think there's a fair chance they could get Michael Carrick. If we do go up, I don't think they'd get him. West Ham's interesting. I think West Ham might try and go quite big, you know, if they're still up. And I'll say West Ham. I'll come back to West Ham. I'm not sure.
I forgot about Zinedine Zidane, PSG. That looks pretty natural to me. Toby.
Okay. Real Madrid, I'm going to say Ancelotti stays one more year as well. Chelsea. Luis Enrique. Spurs, Nagelsmann. PSG, Zidane. West Ham, Brendan Rodgers. Leicester.
I like that.
Yeah, Leicester.
That's a good call. Yeah.
I think Graham Potter actually still could end up at Leicester if they do go interim and stay up. I think that works.
Graham Potter, West Ham, Toby.
I could see that as well. He would get the best out of some of the players, and it would align with West Ham strikers don't score goals either. So yeah, that would work.
Is that it? Tom's turn.
I think I might match Toby with a lot of that. I think I'd have Pochettino at Real Madrid. I think he'll go there. Zidane, PSG. I think Chelsea will have Luis Enrique. I think Tottenham have Nagelsmann. I don't mind Brendan Rodgers at West Ham. I think that works. I can't see Rodgers getting a job towards the top of the table. And then Leicester. Yeah, maybe Graham Potter. I don't mind that either.
For some reason, I just look at Brendan Rodgers and Tottenham and I just think that is an obvious one, but it also kind of is.
He does like him. As we've spoken about on the show, David De Levy likes him. His stock was so high. You know, let's not forget, guys, he was the de facto choice for City. Was it 2 years ago now when they thought Pep was going? He was their natural choice. His teams, when he gets his teams going, he can produce wonderful football. He really can. It's just, I think Leicester have let him down a little bit in terms of that defence, you know. But he's taken the responsibility, hasn't he, and gone. But I think West Ham, you'd be delighted with that, Toby, if you got Brendan Rodgers.
The only thing I've realised with my selections is that I've left Poch out in the cold again for another year.
Well, he has a habit of getting overlooked for big jobs, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
I think that's the danger, though, isn't it? If he waits until the Champions League final for Real Madrid to see if he win, that's the danger sometimes, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Just a quick word on Brendan Rodgers. Graham alluded to it just there. Toby, I'll come to you first. Case has stayed too long, really, right?
Yeah, I think so. This season, they've always been fragile from set pieces, haven't they? And they've always shipped a lot of goals. And the thing that Leicester always did was score a lot of goals, and they had Jamie Vardy scoring goals for fun for a decade. He scored once this season. I think he's 35 now, he's not in the team, and Leicester haven't found a way to replace his source of goals. I think they've tried Daka and Iheanacho and rotated them throughout the season, but it just hasn't worked, and they've kind of relied on Maddison actually to get them the points that they have got. But even then, they've lost 17 out of 28. They still concede from set pieces. They're in real trouble, aren't they? Looking at it, I know everybody at the bottom is in trouble and it's so tight that one win can jump you from 19th to 14th. But Leicester are the one
concede
team
that Palace team, though, as well, TC. They had the game won, didn't they? Because that Palace team are not very good. To concede two goals late onto that Palace team. I think that's the first time at the weekend, I say to him, we'd be picking our bottom threes quite regularly. And I've always left West Ham and Leicester out. I'd be tempted to put Leicester in now. I really would, because that weekend performance, 1-0 up against Palace. Well, how long was it to go? 20 minutes to 1-0 up at Palace.
Yeah,
shocking. Like that's not the Palace are not a good team.
But it says to me that there's a mentality thing there. Once you start losing those kind of games, it's very difficult to get out of that habit. And Leicester have only drawn 4, I want to say, this season. So they either win. But more often than not, they've been sliding to defeats. And I think they've conceded a lot of late goals. So not surprised that Rodgers went, but I don't actually know who can go in there and kind of turn that around. I think Mike Stowell's in charge, isn't he, G? who's been at Leicester for a long time.
The old Wolves goalkeeper, wasn't he, back in the day? I think Leicester, it sounds silly, go and get an Allardyce or a Pulis just to keep you up for 6 weeks. Go and get them. I think Rafa is the wrong choice if it does go. Who wants to play for Rafa Benitez? Not a lot of people in England do. I go and get Tony Pulis, Big Sam, pay them whatever, a few million in comments, whatever they want to keep you up. It's at that point now, Leicester, it doesn't matter what football you're playing, you have to stay in the Premier League. You have to.
It can't end Sam Allardyce's tippy-tappy football podcast, can we? Anyway, Tom, you haven't been on the show for a little while. What's your bottom three?
Southampton. I think I've accepted them quite quickly. I was one of the few people who were back in Southampton to start this season, and that's blown up in my face. Who have we got? I could see Everton going. They just don't seem to have enough about them. And I know they came back against Tottenham, but I think Everton might drop. And I think I'll go Bournemouth, just because I just don't think Bournemouth have got a good enough squad.
Yeah, fair play. I think that's the common shout. Anyway, Graham, you're still insisting on Bournemouth staying up.
I think Bournemouth are giving me great value for money. I've said they're one of the best teams I've seen football-wise all season. I saw them at Leeds, when they lost 4-3 after being 3-1 up or something. But they play really, really good attacking football and they go for it. I think they've got much more life in them than some of the teams we've seen. And I was just thinking actually there, Southampton talking Ralph Hasenhüttl. I wonder if he comes into the Leicester equation. I think he might.
Don't do it, Leicester. Don't do it. You need to stay in the league. Don't. Anyway, let's move on. Let's go on with the rest of the show. Graham, RB Leipzig centre-back, Josko Gvardiol, interesting Real Madrid and Manchester City. We reported this over the weekend. Was picked up in quite a few places. Is this a case of he will move this summer? Is it a case of there's a price that needs to be met? What can you tell us?
Yeah, there is a price, you know, Leipzig, they've said to Vardiol, I think, that, from my understanding, around 75 million is what we're being told. And they do really want him. Yeah, Man City and Real Madrid do. The problem both have got is other area of the teams first, as we see it with lots of teams. Euro and United's got where, they do want a centre-half, but he's probably second or third on the list. So it's Wendy Doon. Obviously, both these teams want Jude Bellingham. Man City, as we've reported, are having a bit of a midfield overhaul. So it just depends where it kicks off. I think Vardiol now, he's accepted he's not going to go to Chelsea, although they are still interested. I think he's prepared to wait this. This isn't going to be an early one, but I think at some point in the summer, we will see City and Real scrapping it out for Vardiol. I could see it happening.
What does that mean in that case then for other Man City defenders, Aymeric Laporte, for example?
Yeah, he's on his way out. He's one of these where City have accepted he can go. They told him a few weeks ago he can look for a club. And it's interesting, Barcelona had him mapped out to go there. One of quite a few Man City players who might have been treading that path to the Camp Nou, but they've actually completed or agreed a deal, I should say, for the Bilbao centre-half, Martinez, Iñigo Martinez. Very good player, 31. Quite similar to Laporte, really, but he's on a free, which is a big thing, which Laporte isn't. So we've seen Laporte and his people have been going around Europe, letting people know he's available. And Tottenham are one of the ones who've had a sniff. To be fair, he's a very good Premier League centre-half, isn't he? Outside the top two or three, he would improve most teams, I think, or at least get his game. So yeah, I think there'll be a lot of interest in Laporte. It wouldn't surprise me to see him cross the Premier League.
We'll see. We will see indeed. Let's talk about another centre-half. Toby, I'll come to you for this one. William Saliba at Arsenal. We don't know the status of his injury at the moment. Suggestions, it could be quite bad. But Arsenal plodding on without him. Winning at the weekend against Leeds. Arsenal are looking to renew contracts of some key players. William Saliba is one of them. What can you tell us about the progress on his potential extension?
Yeah, we did a story back in October that revealed that Arsenal wanted to tie down Bukayo Saka, William Saliba and Gabriel Martinelli to new long-term contracts. Martinelli is done and dusted, as we know. We revealed a couple of weeks ago that Saka has an agreement in principle over terms. It's just kind of, as Graham likes to say, dotting the I's and crossing the T's on that one. And Arsenal still are not at that point with Saliba. They're still working on talks with him. They want to get an agreement reached before the players go away this summer on holiday, when Arsenal hope to have won a first Premier League title in 19 years. But they haven't made the progress that they would have hoped to by this point. That's not to say that Arsenal are concerned at the moment. They obviously have on-field matters to worry about. They're trying to maintain their winning streak. But talks are kind of ongoing with Saliba, and there's not the progress that Arsenal would want. Certainly not Saka levels of progress. And as you say, Scott, he's now injured, potentially ruled out until the end of the season. Mikel Arteta didn't really give too much away, did he? In his press conference, he kind of alluded to it's a back problem. They don't really know the full extent of it. But he's one of their most important players, has played a really key role in shaping that Arsenal defence alongside Gabriel this season. Rob Holding went in at the back at the weekend. And I think that kind of highlights how crucial Saliba is for Arteta. And he's a player that the club want to build around for the long term. So it would be a long-term contract that Arsenal want to agree with him. It's just a case of ironing out wages, bonus payments, etc. There is interest in Saliba. PSG have liked him for a long time. Juventus have shown an interest. Not to say that they're muscling their way in at this point, but if Saliba keeps performing at the levels that he has been, I'd imagine a number of top clubs would kind of shortlist him as a potential signing for the future.
At the risk of sounding quite reactionary, is there really a much better place to be than Arsenal at the moment? Juventus doesn't strike you as all their ducks in order. PSG, you know what's going on there. William Saliba might be in a good place though.
Arsenal is certainly one of the more stable clubs who are performing well. Appear to only be going one way under Arteta, and that's up. And they're going to bring in other players to strengthen this squad. But I still think Saliba would be one of the better players at the club. He's shown over the last 7 or 8 months that Arteta was right to place his faith in him. Do you remember last summer we were discussing whether or not Saliba would be going back to Marseille on a permanent deal? And now look at it, 8 months later, he's a staple in the France squad. He's not starting yet for Didier Deschamps. They've obviously got an abundance of options, but he went to the World Cup. Arguably, if you were to put Arsenal names on a team sheet, Saliba would be 3 or 4, you'd say.
Well, do you remember that conversation we were having? Harry was our Arsenal fan colleague. And the Arsenal fans, he was saying, oh, let's play him in the cup and stuff, wasn't he? If you remember, I was having a thing with him where even Arsenal fans didn't realise how good he is. And he's really come on leaps and bounds. And for me, I don't think Saliba gets the credit he deserves. I think he's light years ahead of Gabriel. And he gets so much credit. But I think Saliba's the one. I think he's a rock at that in that defence.
I think Gabriel maybe has a ceiling to put in a higher level of performance, but he also has dips and low points, whereas I think Saliba's consistency has been far greater this season. And look, they might be without him for the next few weeks, and Arsenal have got some tough games coming up. We will see how that defence holds tight without him there, because Rob Holding certainly isn't William Saliba level of quality.
Arsenal play at Anfield on Sunday. Liverpool go to Chelsea on Tuesday night. You probably, if you're listening to this, you might have seen the game by now, unless you're a very, very dedicated listener who listens every time we drop. We'll come back to Chelsea in a minute with Tom, but I'll just run through this quick Man United note. Luke Shaw signed a new contract on Tuesday, 4-year deal. He is expected to be the first of a few players to commit longer term. He was the one, again, who came out after Man United lost a game in embarrassing fashion to front up and talk about it. Always seems to happen. Those defeats seem to happen quite frequently, and it always seems to be Luke Shaw who's the one speaking to the camera. Graham, you mentioned about in recent conversation between us, Luke Shaw's leadership was actually referenced in United's statements. I think it might have been John Murta, possibly, who said it. One deal on the table that has been signed. What do United think of Luke Shaw? Is he's really high in their estimation at the moment?
Yeah, from what I'm told, he's he's really impressed out Ten Hag and scouts, but he's surprised them to some extent. He came in, remember, the first few games of the season, he was competing quite heavily with Lazio, wasn't he? But he has been absolutely fantastic. And he's a real candidate to be the next captain, from what I'm hearing as well. Scott, I think he'd be an ideal fit. But he's played so well. We know Marcus Rashford and what Eric Ten Hag's done for him and Steve McLaren. But I think Shaw's up there for the way he's matured in his whole game under Eric Ten Hag. You know, who'd have thought this time last year that you could be playing Luke Shaw in a centre-half role and not be worried, Scott? You know, it's an amazing progress he's made. The confidence that he's got from him. I know you all love Martinez, etc., but Luke Shaw has been up there with him and Rashford this season. Has been absolutely phenomenal. The work Eric Ten Hag has done on those two, sensational.
Yes, indeed. A couple of notes on some other players, Graham. David De Gea, Marcus Rashford, Diogo Dalo and Fred are the other two players, right?
Yeah, for the contracts-wise, obviously, we've got to see what happens with Mason Greenwood as well. There's a lot going on at United this summer with the takeover. It's going to be a very, very busy time at Old Trafford. It's got all these new signings as well that you hope. Harry Kane and De Jong, maybe in a taxi on his way to Old Trafford soon. It's going to be a fascinating summer. But yeah, Rashford is one who we've discussed. The new owners complicate things. If there is going to be new owners, then surely they want to announce Marcus Rashford. But United aren't worried about Rashford. He's got another year left. But talks are ongoing. They're not too worried from behind the scenes. They think they'll get it done. And I don't think Marcus Rashford wants to leave Manchester United. And with Eric Ten Hag, I just don't see any way that he leaves the club.
Yes, indeed. Let's move back to Chelsea. I told you this show would be about Chelsea. Tom, I'm going to come to you on Kai Havertz. Obviously, Tom, Chelsea have 40 players on their books, including players who are loaned out, not including youth prospects. Now, Kai Havertz has played quite frequently, but Chelsea fans quite frustrated with him at times. Obviously, how he looks, right? If players look a little bit, is languid the word? I don't know. Maybe like have a little bit of that about him. And don't obviously score as many goals playing in a centre-forward role as you'd expect. It can mean that some frustration builds. Bayern Munich, is this a... We've seen them link with Mason Mount, Bayern Munich. Could it actually be Kai Havertz, who's the subject of more interest than Mason Mount?
Absolutely, yeah. So obviously with Mason Mount's contracts running down and the standoff that has been there, Bayern would be stupid to not be looking at him. And we have heard that they have asked Thomas Tuchel what's Mason Mount like, just to get as they start building up their targets for the summer now that they've got their new boss. But if they get one Chelsea player this summer, we're hearing that they'd prefer it to be Kai Havertz. And I mean, he's been destined for Bayern ever since he came through in Leverkusen. We're hearing that they see him as the heir to Thomas Müller's throne there. And I mean, positionally, you can see that straight away. So, and from a Chelsea perspective, I don't think we'd be too sad to see him go. It's a real shame because it was so exciting when we first got him, but it just hasn't worked out. Whether he fits in the team right, whether it's been built around him poorly, yeah, probably. There's a lot of potential reasons, but we're now coming to a point where Chelsea needs a central striker who is trained as a striker, who has spent his whole career as a striker and can score goals, and Havertz
like,
just doesn't
like
do
Aubameyang
that.
Or like Lukaku.
Yeah, exactly like Lukaku and Aubameyang. But yeah, something just needs to change, and I think Havertz's position is under threat, and Bayern are quite keen to take advantage of that if they can.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of moving parts this summer on the managerial front, on the player front as well. We haven't even talked about midfield. Chelsea, Declan Rice, all of this kind of thing. Jude Bellingham, he's on pretty much every show that we do at the moment, but we're not talking about him today. Plenty going on, especially if the United takeover goes through as well, and there's millions and millions and millions more going into the market. Should be quite interesting. On the subject of Chelsea potential strikers, though, there is a young Brazilian. Chelsea did sign Datro Fofana in January. Obviously, we've mentioned Victor Osimhen is on their list as well. Graham, Chelsea, though, are one of a few clubs who are looking at a young Brazilian striker who I'm going to pass to you on now, if you can tell us.
Yeah, Vitor Roque, one of the best young strikers in South America. One of the first teams actually linked him was West Ham, wasn't it, TC? We did a piece on him. West Ham were first in there.
I tell you what, though, right? You cannot argue with West Ham's talent radar. We spoke on last week's show, Darwin Núñez, Calvin Phillips. Who else was there?
Rafinha at the time.
Rafinha.
They've always had a strong South American presence, haven't you, TC?
Yeah, they're good at identifying players at source. I think West Ham's difficulty is then actually concluding any of these deals. Yeah, convincing them that West Ham is the right place to grow and form a footballing education. That's obviously not the case. But sorry, Graham, go back to Chelsea.
Yeah, no, Vitor Roque. Yeah, he made his debut for Brazil. He's 18. He's ready to move to Europe now. Barcelona have always been in poor position for this guy. This is the one that they turned to instead of trying to get involved in Endrick at the time. They thought this guy was... Obviously, he's a bit further on. He's 3 years older. But the problem is Barcelona's off-field issues financially. And they haven't got the money to pay in one go. They're looking at proposing a deal. It'll see him come on loan with an obligation. Very similar to how Mbappe moved from Monaco to PSG at the time. But actually, we did a story yesterday, on Monday, that Chelsea and Arsenal, they're the two clubs who are really pushing this. They're staying in contact already with Arsenal that they really want him. There's been an update overnight, actually, on this guy, Scott. Not an update, but his father, Juvenal Ferreira, is in Europe now talking to clubs. He's in Barcelona talking to him, but apparently he has also been in contact with English clubs. So we will be doing an update on this ourselves. But yeah, his father and some representatives are in Europe now. I think they're gauging where they're at. I think they're making sure if Barcelona, if you really want my son, then he's going to go. You know, we've spoken before about Barcelona, but Chelsea and Arsenal are on standby here. They're the main two who are looking at him thinking we can get this. But there's lots of English clubs as well, Scott. You know, apart from West Ham, Manchester United have looked at him, Tottenham. This is an 18-year-old Brazilian international. And if you get a chance to get him, he's at Atlético Paranaense. He's not mega money. So, yeah, if Barcelona don't get this done, the Premier League clubs are ready to pounce.
Is he better than Wout Weghorst, Graham?
I don't... Yeah, I think so. I think TC is better than Wout Weghorst. So, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Has Wout Weghorst scored a Premier League goal yet, Flund?
I don't think he has.
That chance on Sunday, Scott, where he went for the near post, it's like, come on, just get it on target, mate.
On the subject of strikers, we'll finish the show with Randall Kolo Muani, who is another player who's been tipped to move for big money in the summer. That might not be the case, though, Graham.
No, but this number nine, I think that all these players, all these agents who've got number nines, are making, they know they need to get out this summer. You know, you've got Manchester United, Chelsea, the big two who are prepared to spend mega money on a number nine, Bayern Munich. This could be the summer of the number nines. And Muani, Randall Muani's only been at Eintracht Frankfurt since the summer, since he moved from Nantes. And he's been great. He's been fantastic, but Frankfurt are not in the mood to sell. They're about to lose Kameda and Dika, isn't it? On two Bosmans, the two best players. So, no. Apparently, source in Germany telling us even 100 million euros might not get him out. So, you know, there is other targets out there for other clubs. He is being watched by. United have looked at him. Chelsea have looked at him. They've all looked at him. But Frankfurt are not really willing to do business. And with some of these deals, as we'll see with United, Scott, a lot of these clubs don't want to be dragged into sagas. United had it last summer with De Jong. You know, if a player is not for sale, I think you'll see clubs moving on quite quickly.
Plenty of players who will be moving. Maybe Kolo Muani will not be one of them. But like we say, big summer transfer window coming up on the managerial front and on the player front in a bunch of positions as well. So there's going to be plenty of money spent, we're sure. We'll be back to talk all about transfers that are coming up, that are potentially on the radar. We'll talk next week. But thanks for listening to us today. We do have to scoot off now because the website beckons. 90min.com/talking-transfers for all of the latest transfer news from us and our team. 90min_football on all the socials and also our private personal personal, not private, socials. Scott Saunders, underscore Scott Saunders. I'm getting my own one wrong. Toby underscore Cudworth. Graham, at Graham Bailey, at TomGot2 on all the Twitterverse. So you can get us over there for all the latest news as we distribute it to you. We'll be back next Tuesday with another Talking Transfers. Until then, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.